Good afternoon and welcome to the Legislative and Outreach Committee. I'd like to have a call to order and review our quorum.
Okay. Chair Saxett?
Here.
Vice Chair Hilliker?
Here.
Vice Chair Youngrice?
Here.
Director Bailey? Director Bowersox? Director Boyle?
Here.
Director Croucher?
Here.
Director Daly?
Here.
Director Douglas?
Here.
Director Mudd? Director Meir?
Here.
Director Walston?
Here.
Director Two?
Here.
Director Howard Williams?
Here.
You have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additions to the agenda? Public comments? Well, then I'd like to move to the chair's report. Since this is our first meeting of this committee for the year, I would like to welcome my committee and thank you all for taking on this challenge. I would especially like to recognize our two new members who are here with us today, Director Douglas and Director Walson. And I'd like to also thank you for participating. And I also would like to recognize and thank my two co-chairs, Director Hilliker and Director Youngrice. And I look forward to working with all of you. We have a busy schedule coming up for this year, and we're working on our goals at this time, and we'll be coming back to you with those goals so that the board can review them. And I'd also like to, Director Knutson earlier today talked about the San Vicente Bite Light dedication. It was very successful, and for our committee it was important because we also received very good media coverage on that event. So we had both print and television coverage. Maureen was well photographed And it was very good. But the event itself, I want to congratulate staff for that event. It was very well done. With that concludes my report. And I'd like to ask Director Boyle if he could give us a report on his committee.
Yes, thank you. First of all, thank you guys for appointing me to this committee. I think I can have an impact on it. I think I can learn something from it, and I think I can also teach some of the people that are involved in a lot of other stuff about equipment that they don't currently appear to understand. I'm going to keep this short. First of all, we had a water supply update from Jason Foster, which I'm sure has changed. I'm sure we'll get into that later. And then we also had a report by Dana about the elasticity with water rates and water use and stuff like that, and that's not unusual. I mean, we all have heard that. The interesting thing that really took me was the industry presentations. This is a great forum to have these people come out and talk to, you know, people that can have some impact on what it is that they're doing or not. You know, I mean, it's always good to be able to spot fraud in this kind of stuff because we've got to protect our numbers all over the place, but there was Greenleaf did a Dave McElroy did a presentation on evapotranspirative data recording to control sprinklers, and the Green Plumbers were here and announced that they're now the courses that the Green Plumbers offer are being paid for out of the stimulus money, so people can take this course if they're out of work. Or plumbers or want to get involved in water conservation or anything like that, and I think this is just a dynamite opportunity for a lot of people. I know I've personally referred about 11 people, four of whom work for me, to take this course. So that's about it.
Thank you.
It's a Water Conservation Action Committee.
Thank you. And Director Lewis, did you have a question?
Not a question, just a comment. I don't know how many of you had a chance to observe our general manager on the early morning news, but she gave a great illustration, a very short presentation, maybe 8 minutes long, explaining why the value of water is going up. She went in every detail And I asked her if she could have this small segment available for anyone that would like to present it to their city council or to their board members, because it was just an excellent illustration, very short and very informational.
Thank you, and we will send it out to the agencies.
Thank you. We have nothing on the consent calendar. On the action calendar, we have a report from Sacramento. Mr. Clay?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. Jonathan Clay, I'll be giving the Sacramento report. Mr. Carpi extends his apologies for not being able to be here to give the Washington report. I think in your hand carry package, there is a written report from Mr. Carpi detailing what's going on in Washington. I feel kind of a bit like a broken record these days, because it seems every year at the beginning of the year I come stand before you and it's all about budget, and it seems that the budget has now just turned into a year-round process in Sacramento. This year will, I don't think, be any different. The governor, new governor Jerry Brown, stepped into office and immediately stirred things up with the release of his proposed January budget for the fiscal year 2011-2012 starting on July 1st. It's going to be interesting to see how this begins to play, because I think it's safe to say this may be one of the more realistic budgets that we've had in a long time in terms of what are the actual problems being faced and how to address that in terms of on a dollar perspective. And looking at the budgets, kind of in a generalization, but you roughly have it split down the middle with about $12.5 billion worth of cuts, and then the governor looking to go to the voters to extend existing taxes for another 5 years for another basically value of about $12 billion. Coupled with that, the governor is also proposing some major changes in how government is delivered in California in terms of, you'll hear the term realignment. And what that basically means is the state's looking to start trying to shift programs back down to the local level and have more local control. Those in local government have dubbed it the shift in the shaft. We'll see how this process goes. And that's because in years past, the state has typically handed off programs with not enough money. And it's always been the case. And there's a fear that history will repeat itself in this instance. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. I think what's more interesting is with the need for the governor's called for a 60-day process. And why that's important is because March 11th is the technical deadline for putting something on the June ballot for going to the voters. So we have this very short window to accomplish some very big technical kind of reshaping of government. So it's going to be an interesting dance. Counties are going to be the most directly impacted. There are impacts in the governor's budget to enterprise special districts. When you look at what he's proposing on redevelopment and wiping out redevelopment agencies and letting the property tax increment flow back to the successor agencies, he's purposely excluding enterprise special districts from receiving that property tax increment back. And the argument there is because enterprise districts are able to raise their rates, they can recoup any type of loss through that way. I think also kind of coupled with that, you've also seen a lot of stuff in the news about redevelopment agencies. I guess they call it the Mardi Gras effect, or trying to really push through as many projects as they can before something happens. So at the end of the day, if the redevelopment proposal happens, most likely you're not going to see $1.7 billion worth of savings coming back to the state. That means they're going to have to make it up someplace else. And I just think it's going to probably at some point come out of local government in one way or another, whether it's through local cities, special districts, remains to be seen. Redevelopment probably will happen, even though there's a huge coalition building to try and stop it. Basically wiping out the redevelopment districts, when you put that before the legislature, especially Democratic members, and we've been meeting with our San Diego legislative delegation, querying about the budget, but also like what do you see coming ahead, they'd much rather take money from redevelopment, which is sort of a faceless entity, than make further cuts on Health and Human Services. And what's an interesting dynamic to all this, which I didn't quite pick up at first, but is definitely an undertone to all this is a redistricting year. New maps are going to be coming out, and everyone's a little tentative on what that's going to mean for them. And there's been some interesting speculation about how things will get shifted around San Diego. Because if you remember, going back to 2000, Senator Duchenne had a very firm hand in helping craft her Senate district, which kind of looks like a boot. Covered most of Coachella, Imperial, and then came through, got the southern part of San Diego County up into Coronado to capture where she lives in Imperial Beach. That probably won't survive through the new redistricting process and the commission. You'll probably see a more normal-looking district that's probably more contiguous over to the eastern side of the California border, encompassing Imperial, Coachella, and kind of going up that way. So then everyone starts looking for what's that new Senate seat going to look like down in the southern part of San Diego, and how many assembly members are going to get nested into that. So that's kind of some big picture stuff, but those are some of the different moving parts of what we're going to be dealing with in terms of a budget this year. In terms of the legislative process, this is the start of a new two-year session. So we've already passed our first deadline, which was getting language into Ledge Council on the 21st of this month. Bill introduction deadline is February 18th. All new bills have to be introduced, and then we sit for about 30 days for everything to be in print, and then we start the hearing process and all through that. Because it's the first year of a two-year session, we'll typically go until September 15th, and I caveat that with typical because nothing's been typical in the last few years, and so we've gone as late as October, November. So, and as I said, we've been making the rounds with our San Diego legislators, talking to them about issues coming out of San Diego water. I want to kind of highlight a couple bills for you real quick before I end my report. These are bills that we've referred to the water authorities, so you'll probably start seeing them coming before the committee for positions in the near future. AB 19 by Assemblymember Ng is a rehash of last year's bill dealing with water submetering. I know this was a big deal for the city of San Diego because of local ordinances that had already been put in place. Assemblymember Jeffries has two bills, AB 83. This one is a CEQA exemption for recycled water pipeline. Again, this is a rehash from last year. His bill, I don't even think, had a vote taken on it in its first policy committee last year, but he's entering the fray back again on that one. His second bill is AB 157, which is his view of what a water bond should look like, and coming in and just basically taking the top 25% off of all programs and reducing the bond down. I'm sure we'll see some other efforts in that. We have sort of both environmental Democrats that want to not see a bond happen, and you have fiscal conservative Republicans that feel that now is not the time to be moving an $11 billion bond that seemed to be coming together on this issue. So it should prove to be dynamic in Sacramento. I'll throw this one in just for kind of an interesting AB 134 by Assemblymember Dickinson. He's a former Sacramento County supervisor, and what it's basically, he's carrying a bill dealing with the Sacramento Sanitation District and appropriate rights. And what he's basically saying is they want to recapture the water rights to their wastewater that they put into the river. And you may remember probably about a year or two ago, the Sacramento Sanitation District had sort of announced that they were going to start treating all their discharge water, which is they basically don't have to just treat it to anywhere near the level like, say, the city of San Diego does or other entities down here. But they wanted to charge people for the privilege of getting their untreated outflow. And so now it sounds like they're going to try and make a plea to the legislature to give them the appropriate rights to that water. So that will be interesting because there's a lot of people that depend on that further south. In the Senate side, two bills. One is SB 34 by Senator Simidian. This is what he's calling a public goods charge. He's trying to model it after what is done on the energy side. I think the best way to describe this is it's essentially dusting off the old RIF proposal that the Schwarzenegger administration and Lester Snow had put before us. I guess it's now been 4 or 5 years ago now, where basically they want to put a surcharge onto water to then reinvest for public infrastructure. So basically charge us at the local level and then maybe give us 50 cents back on the dollar for our own local projects. So that'll be interesting. And then finally, and this is a reintroduced bill, Senator Correa is reintroducing SB 46, which is disclosure requirements for public officials, and this is a bill dealing with the outfalls from the City of Bell scandal. And there will be quite a few more bills in that area as well. So with that, I will conclude my presentation and see if there's questions.
Mr. Kelly, there was a report on the radio this morning that the Pew Research Center had done a study, and Governor Brown is at 48%, so his numbers look good, but they said that the public is not willing, or the numbers aren't there, to pass a new tax. So is there a contingency plan if the tax won't go through?
That has been a question on all of our minds from local government land. The answer is not really. If going to the voters and trying to secure the extension of the existing taxes for five more years fails, the governor simply said, well, then we're going to have to cut more. And the reality of taking another $12 billion worth of cuts in this fiscal year, I'm not sure that's going to happen. So we're not quite sure what Plan B is going to look like. And it was interesting. I sat through a hearing yesterday in Sacramento where they're looking at how you deal with realignment. And some of the suggestions coming from sort of think tank groups and others is you might want to include, if you're going to the voters with asking for more money, essentially, you may want to include on there the equal amount of $12 billion worth of cuts so that the voters understand here's actually what's happening if these taxes are passed, which the legislature's never done before in terms of actually, they've usually asked for money but not really shown where the dollar-for-dollar cuts are. So we'll see what happens there.
Director, you?
Me too. Okay. Hi, Jonathan. Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the redistricting, has there a tradition? I know this is from a proposition that the restricting commissioners are all going to be selected, not the politician that is drawing the lines. How long ago was that since the last time a citizen commission? And then the second part of the question is, Do water people tend to kind of weigh into the district at all traditionally?
In terms of the first question, I don't remember the last time, and there may not have been a last time that it's been a citizen commission. You may remember that in 1990 you ended up with some pretty competitive districts, but that was, I believe, based upon the court's intervention, not some sort of citizen group. In terms of the second question, in terms of water districts weighing into
drawing of the lines.
No. So the drawing of the lines will be handled by the Board of Supervisors, and San Diego County, I believe, just recently docketed and had a hearing on their process of how they're going to start doing the maps. And everyone, I think, under the statutes for doing this, everything needs to be kind of wrapped up by the first or second week of August for having maps done and released. And so I believe San Diego County is showing that they'll have everything done by end of July, first part of August, for at least local. Yeah.
Director Young-Royce.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Comment and a question. AB 134, what a great deal for Southern California, huh?
Yes.
We get to spend a ton of money for wastewater treatment they probably should have installed 20 years ago. And then, as an added bonus, we get, of course, it's kind of a different situation here. When we see that wastewater plants want to be able to sell recycled water, we think, well, that's a good idea. We should encourage more recycled water. And I think we all agree that in most cases that's probably a good result. But what it appears is the case with this piece of legislation is that they would then sell the water not to their own customers, but to us. They would basically, we would pay to, to give them this water right, and they would sell it basically to Metropolitan, which then winds up, so through our rates, the water authority actually wind up paying for all of this improvements, which probably should have been taken care of a while ago by, I know you're a Sacramento resident, but probably the ratepayers in Sacramento.
County, and I'm on a well, so it's a kind of a surreal experience for me. When I bought a house, and I said, "How much can I pump?"
Yeah,
you can pump as much as you want.
So. Isn't that nice? But I guess my point is just that that is obviously that's that type of legislation, particularly where you mess with traditional water rights. The issue of who owns the water rights from recycled water is a complicated one. There are specific state statutes that deal with that. If you carve out a specific exemption for this plant in Sacramento. I think you, even if you made it narrow in the legislation, I think it really opens a can of worms that, that it could be, for those who have recycled water programs, it does create some issues that, that may be very difficult. So one thought, and then the I wanted to see what you're hearing about SBX from the extraordinary session, the SBX 7-6, the groundwater legislation. Do you have any thoughts on where that's likely to head?
I don't. I know the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife has just scheduled a oversight hearing on groundwater. I believe it's either next week or the week after. I have it actually in my daily file, so I can let you know the specific date on that. But I don't have a good sense of that. And to be honest, I don't have a good sense of how this year's legislative process is going to play out because of what's going to be happening with the budget and the budget dance. I think it's kind of going to need to let that sort of percolate for a while, so to speak.
Director Lewis?
Just a question in reference to state bankruptcy. I don't know if it's quite legal or not, but if is there any discussion about that, or is there any discussion about passing legislation that would make it possible?
I don't believe there's much discussion of that going on in Sacramento and at the state level. I've read at least two articles in the Wall Street Journal and another one in the New York Times where there are discussions about trying to pass federal legislation, because it's federal legislation that allows cities and counties to be able to go bankrupt, but there's not the commensurate legislation for states. And there has been discussion at the federal level with the new Congress of trying to grant states that authority. And they think, I guess the argument is that's a better way to get states to kind of clean up their financial houses than direct bailouts from the state, from the federal government. That is I don't even want to say can of worms. That's like opening up a nuclear-powered box that I'm sure will engender a lot of opposition discussion, just because I think on the union side, I think a lot of folks will then view that as an end run to try and completely undo existing contracts, pension benefits, the like. So,
Mr. Lynn?
I'm not on your committee, but I have a quick question. How is the governor's relationship with the unions? And is it true or not that the governor has asked for a 10% reduction in the pay of state employees? And if that's the case, how are the unions handling that?
That is the case. That was in his budget. And basically he's mirroring that proposal off of, if you remember, towards the end of the Schwarzenegger administration, a number of employee bargaining groups had come together with similar types of concessions, both in terms of essentially they're getting a pay reduction because there's still going to continue to be one or one and a half furlough Fridays, so to speak, which gets you down on that salary level. The governor has made it clear that he intends to negotiate, I think it's 10 bargaining units that are left, and get similar concessions. That's why that dollar amount is in the budget. I haven't followed it close enough to know about whether they're going to be trying to make changes to new hires in terms of benefit levels, two-tier system, or any of that. But no, in terms of the relationship the governor has with the unions, I can only base it upon what I just read in the paper. And the governor does have a very strong relationship with the unions, and I think they're all kind of looking at this as they're going to give on this front, and they're going to push real hard on both the tax front and then trying to kind of limit where some of those cuts are going to be coming from, because I think no one wants to see, at least on that side of the equation, the tax measure reauthorization to fail and then another $12 billion worth of cuts. But again, a lot of that is my conjecture from just the newspaper articles and such that I've been reading.
Yes.
What are you anticipating on the Bay Delta bypass conveyance system?
That's going to be an interesting process because of the BDCP, the environmental planning process that had gone into trying to basically be the framework for doing a conveyance facility. That was not completed under the Schwarzenegger administration. They basically released a rough draft of their documents at the very end of the administration. You now have a new secretary, someone familiar in the water community in Jerry Merrill, but new into this role of running the BDCP, stepping into that. I think in all likelihood you will see, and this is just my kind of reading of the tea leaves, but I think you'll see the existing BDCP process and something new restarted. It may use many of the same documents, but I think from the environmental constituencies that have been involved with this, I think they're going to want to see a symbolic end to that existing BDCP process, which they had a lot of problems with. But because the governor has been supportive of a conveyance facility, Mr. Merrill, who is a longtime environmentalist and comes out of the environmental community, has also been an advocate for Delta conveyance. I think you'll see something come out of that. But as I was talking with one of the other directors earlier today, I think you're going to see a much different looking facility than what is contemplated in the existing BDCP in terms of the size and scope of it. I hope that answers your question.
Mark?
Yeah. Where's the governor coming out on selling state assets? Is he kind of coming out of that?
You know, I've lost track of that. I believe he's taken taken a sidestep on this while the lawsuit plays out on the sale of those 11 buildings. I think there's been a lot of folks coming at it from the treasurer, the controller, LAO, saying that that sale of those 11 buildings was short-sighted because, yeah, you may get an influx of a couple billion dollars today, but when you look at the life of the contract and the terms, it actually costs the state more money. So the question really comes down to why is that in the state's interest? And the governor, I believe, has kind of officially kind of taken a step back to let the lawsuits play out, which I believe are right now before the state Supreme Court for final disposition. But I've lost a little bit of track of that, so I'm not quite sure where things stand at this point.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And looking at legislation, Jeff Bolger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're proposing that the Water Authority sponsor two bills for the 2011 legislative year. The first of these bills is actually a reintroduction of a bill that the Water Authority sponsored last year that had to do with artificial turf. There was an incident in Fallbrook where a gentleman had put in artificial turf for water conservation purposes at his home, and a homeowners association had asked him to remove that turf. The Water Authority and the Fallbrook PUC worked with the Homeowners Association and the homeowner to resolve this issue. But we did carry a bill last year that would prohibit property owners associations from enforcing rules against the installation of artificial turf and landscaping for conservation purposes. The bill passed through the legislature and then was vetoed by the governor. We understand more for political than for policy reasons, and with the new governor and the new Secretary of Natural Resources, we believe that it would be possible or more likely that the bill would be signed this year, so we'd like to try again. So that is one bill that we would recommend that the Water Authority sponsor. The second bill was brought to us by Director Lewinger. Existing law mandates that fluoride be added to drinking water, and existing law also, through the regional board's basin plans, sets a lower standard for fluoride in wastewater discharges and in recycled water than is set for drinking water, which means that the water has to be put in to the or the fluoride has to be put into the drinking water and then taken back out again in the wastewater and recycling process. What this bill would say is that the regional water quality control boards would have to reconcile their standards with the standards for drinking water so that the two are the same, and not require that the fluoride that's mandated to be put in be taken back out again. So those are the two bills that we are recommending, and that concludes my presentation.
Director Tu?
Move staff recommendation.
Second. All those in favor? Or let me, are there any comments, questions? Director Douglas?
Thank you. In language for artificial turf.
Yes.
Could you read that language to me one more time, please? And is this the whole language, or are you going to add to that?
On the artificial turf, the bill that we would introduce would be identical to last year's bill. It's on page 91 of your board packet, and it's a fairly, it's three, four pages, or actually 2 pages. I can read it for you if you'd like. Or,
no, no. I just wanted to make sure, because this has been a big issue for homeowner associations.
Yes.
Since I sat my own on my own homeowner association, we had several lawsuits from the homeowners because CCNR prohibits the
yes.
use of artificial turf. So this will change a lot of things for homeowner associations. It's good for conservation, and it's good to provide tools to the homeowner association boards that they can regulate what quality
yes.
of turf they're going to put there and how it's going to be installed. But I know this is in a lot of, at least in our part of the county, it's a big issue for homeowners.
Yes, and the bill does provide that the homeowners associations can set standards for the quality and the design
yeah.
of the installation. So, yes, that is in there.
Big issue, yes. Thank you.
Any other comments? We have a first and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We have a presentation by Jason Foster regarding the public opinion poll that the Water Authority is going to conduct. Jason?
Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Saxon, members of the committee and members
Thank
of
you.
The board. I do have a brief presentation for you to share with you where we are in the development of our 2011 public opinion poll and also get your feedback on areas this poll will cover. First, some basic background on our polling. We poll on a variety of topics every 2 years. It's a countywide poll. It's a 700 resident sampling of the region. And in recent years, this poll has taken on additional significance because in addition to getting public perception and awareness on a variety of topics, we're now using the poll to help measure progress toward the board's strategic plan goals and various targets in our business plan as well. Our current schedule, we've been meeting with different member agency groups, the public information officers, the general managers, and now seeking board impact or input on the potential topic areas. We plan to conduct the survey in late March and should have poll results available to share with the board by the time of the April meeting. Now, the hot topics that we have on this, that we're looking at for this particular poll, start with what are the factors that are driving reduced water use. Since there's been very significant reductions in water use over the last couple of years, we want to understand what are the primary factors that have been driving it, looking at price, looking at economy, looking at weather, looking at calls to conserve. And subsequent to that, based on what those drivers are, what is the likelihood for water use to rebound in coming years? Obviously very important to know for budget and planning purposes on a variety of levels. Just as important with that is we want to look at the issues of rate tolerance and acceptance. Given how water rates have risen in recent years, we want to look at where the public is in accepting where their water rates are and understanding how that might impact things moving forward. and what is their willingness to pay for improved water reliability in the future? Has it changed from previous years where it's been very high, but then again at that time water rates were somewhat lower than they are today? We also want to look at, you know, attitudes regarding if we're going to pursue a bond to fund additional desalination or other local supply development projects. And then also considering the impacts that agriculture has taken over the last few years, we want to take a look at some questions in the poll that gauge the value of agriculture to the region and efforts to help support what's been a long-time traditional industry in this region. There are also some areas of the poll that we use to specifically measure progress on the strategic and business plans, as I mentioned. These include measuring the public's attitude and support levels for the Water Authority's overall supply diversification strategy. We also look at where people are in terms of conservation awareness and how they consider it, how many of them consider it a public duty or a civic obligation to use water as efficiently as possible. And, of course, we also look at indirect potable reuse awareness and acceptance. Where is the public in their awareness of this as a potential supply and their acceptance of it based on the science and everything else? And we've seen certainly some very significant gains in the last poll compared to the previous one in 2005. And lastly, we have several standard topic areas that we typically ask year to year to year, basically to give a context for where people's what people are thinking about. And that includes gauging how much is water a top-of-mind issue versus other news and current events. Certainly the economy, unemployment, things like that can also come into play. We also look at attitudes and perceptions concerning water reliability. Do people in general feel that the region's water supplies are becoming more or less reliable based on various factors? And then we also look at growth in water supply management. Do people have concerns about that? It's been a significant concern in the past. It's not been a very significant concern in recent years, but we always usually have a question about that as well. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions, and I'm looking forward to your feedback.
Director Tu.
Okay, Madam Chair. Jason, I noticed you did have the indirect portable reuse awareness and acceptance. Are you going to do anything on the portable use awareness and acceptance? Because, as you know, the City of San Diego is doing some work on that area, and it's in the news a lot lately.
Yes, Director Tu. City staff has contacted us about whether we can collaborate on efforts to gauge awareness of the city's project and attitudes regarding that. And we're obviously very aware that they've got an outreach effort going on for that project. And so, yes, we're planning to meet with them once we have our consultant on board to see how we can best meet their needs.
How many questions do you expect to be in this poll?
Chair Saxon, there's usually about 60 data points that we ask in the poll, and that's about the box of time and attention span that usually residents will give us before they lose interest and you potentially have quality issues with the type of respondents that you get.
And the funding is already set aside for this poll?
Yes, we set aside funding for one poll every 2 years in our budget.
This is an action. Oh, Director Bond. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we using a vendor to help develop the questions?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Bond.
Yeah, and I was just curious, the medium that you're going to use, are we, you know, because of the switch from landline to cell and some on email, some not, how do we get a well-rounded audience on a poll now? I've always wondered that.
You know, Director Bond, that's a very good question. And that's an issue that we put out in the RFP for the survey services on how to address the changing demographics and the increasing movement of people to move from using landlines to cell phones or other modes of communication. And so once we have the consultant on board, we'll determine the final way to make sure that we've got a representative sample of those folks that use that.
Director Muir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the there, I guess there's 700 people going to be polled, and what's the accuracy of that?
The Director Mayor, the accuracy of the poll was based on previous years of the 700 survey sample is plus or minus 3.7 percentage points.
Okay, that's real good. And somebody mentioned earlier about working together with, I think, San Diego. But I see SANDAG has polls, and they do polling, and I see water come up in that. Is there some cross-conversation about having joint polls?
For we have not had joint I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Director Mary, we have not had conversations with SANDAG about joint polls in the past, but that's something that we can certainly look into.
Director Muir, I think one of the challenges when you do a joint poll is, as Jason said, the tolerance of the person on the other end of the line. It's how many questions can you ask? And so what happens is if we go with SANDAG, who's focusing on sand replenishment, freeways, roads, the sales tax increment they use, often we don't get as robust of an opportunity, a robust information, because we're only a small section of it. That's why we do hire experts. They tell us how long and how long our survey can be, because they, for a living, know how long a person will tolerate being on the phone.
Thanks. And I imagine you have your focus group to work on the questions and stuff like that, and they're going to include desalinization and stuff like that. I'm looking for you to nod. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And so can we get a copy of that before you send it out, just to see if we have it? As a board member, we might have some input.
A copy of the poll questionnaire?
Yeah, or just a draft, you know, to get some input on maybe something should be in there.
Really, the input we're seeking is right now, what issues do you want in that poll? We leave the wording and how it's asked to the experts. So I would not recommend we wordsmith the polls. So if you have subject matters, like you just said, desalination, yes, it is on our list, and we will include it.
Director Heidel?
My questions were asked and answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Linden?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not a member of this committee, but what are you going to do with this information? How are you going to use it?
Director Linden, our plan would be to share this information with the board at the April meeting, and from there, hopefully the information is useful enough to provide some, at least, clues to consider among the other factors that we may need to have for water planning, outreach, and other setting rates and budgets, and it could be applied to a variety of purposes. So that's why we want to share it with the board, so that can be at least one more point of data among all the rest that we can use, that the board can use to make your decisions.
Mr. Kirchner?
What kind of cost, what's this costing us?
The poll budget is $25,000.
Mr. Cushman?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to Jason's comments. Director Linden, we also would intend, of course, to have pretty in-depth discussions with the member agency general managers about what the poll tells all of us about what is driving conservation, a sustained demand reduction. We think the information from the poll will help inform decision-making not only by the Water Authority, but perhaps by the member agencies when they are producing their own budgets and forecasts and addressing when and if and to what degree demand will rebound, as it is a major driver of our revenues and budget structures.
Director Lewis?
Just an add-on to that, the City of Carlsbad has used this for quite a few years, and it's very valuable as to where you're going to spend your money based on what the public is telling you they'd like to have. And so we have always felt that it was extremely important to us to have this taken every year, and you get feedback as to if they know you or not. I always call this a shadow government. Maybe it's not, but maybe it is. And people, it'd be interesting to ask sometimes if you could name the board of directors on this organization. But anyway, it's been very valuable to the City of Carlsbad.
I think this morning in our budget discussion, we talked about what can be done by CWA to help the other districts, and I think this is a good example of that. Director Mayor?
Yeah, is this, was it Rua and Parker that did the last survey from San Diego State?
Yes, that's correct.
Are they going to do the same thing, or is it going out to a bid? Or?
We went through a competitive bidding process. We got 9 solid bids for the service to conduct the services this year, and we're in the final arrangements of trying to negotiate a contract. So it's not final who's going to do the poll this year, but we hope to have that done within the next couple of days.
Any other questions? This is an action item, so I need a motion. Director Tu, and I'm sorry, was it? This was just, oh, I'm sorry. Director Bowersox, do you have a report for us on the Water Conservation Garden?
Well, sort of. As you know, we successfully transitioned from a Joint Powers managed garden in January and December to a Friends of the Garden managed garden in January. So the first true quarterly report will come after the March JPA meeting. However, for interest, I thought I'd toss out a few of the statistics from the last calendar year. We got 47,000 visitors at the site. Through our education program, Ms. Smarty Plants reached 25,000 elementary school age children. We had 1,036 adults take our programs, and another 7,200 people on formal tours of the garden. So it was quite active. It was the second highest attendance year in the 18-year history of the garden. With the next highest year below us would be 32% over that 2 years ago. Lastly, during the first 3 months of this calendar year, there'll be 26 classes taught at the garden on various subjects, everything from foods to building. And the big activity coming up is on April 9th with the Spring Garden Festival. So for more information after the March meeting on the actual activities of the garden during the first quarter, but everything seems to be going okay at this time.
The government relations report is in the packet. So with that, this meeting ends.
Imported water will start in 5 minutes.